So that was the end of our oldest brother like that. So the other children didn't leave home. We stayed around until we got married. My brother Fletcher married a girl from here, Maddie Riley, and they raised a family and lived in Seneca. He worked over there at Longsdale Mill for a long time. That was his occupation. So my next sister, Pasadena, she went off to school and graduated and everything. Then my father sent her to Spelman College in Atlanta. Mm-hmm. She got a job teaching school in Buckhead, Georgia. So she met and married a man via George Van Buren. So George taught school and he believed in education and believed in different things like that. For some reason, he was assassinated. And over in Georgia, they brought his body home. His killer, whoever did that, was never apprehended. They never did do anything about it, so she never did marry again.
Do you know about when that happened, when he was murdered? That, before 1920 or after?
No, it was before. It was after 1920, because at that time when George got killed, I was married.
Oh, okay.
Uh-huh.
And you were born in 1900,
that's
so
right.
It had to be
that's
maybe
around 1930s.
Okay.
That's right.
Okay.
It was all around in 1930s. But it is.
This children, when we were talking in between, you said that your grandfather Scott's house is still standing and Pasadena was married there. Is that right?
Yes, Grandpa had this great big house, the old plank scale place, what you call it, now down on 123, down there on the Union. So after all of Grandpa's children got married, he was left alone. This was a great big house and whatnot. So he sold this house and moved down inside of Seneca in a smaller house. And that's when my sister was married.
This bigger house.
That's right. Both houses are still there.
This bigger house is on 123 bypass.
That's right. That's right. That's where we all grew up, you might say. Where we go, you know, go to your grandma's house and jump out of the barn and swing and play and whatnot like that. So grandfather sold this house and all of that land around there. He owned his own home and owned all of that land around it there with his.
Where is that located? Is that on the way to
Seneca
from Westminster?
It's on its way, yes. Right where the shopping center is now.
The Walmart one?
Big, that's right. Right where Big Lot.
Big Lot.
Right where Big Lot. Do you remember that railroad going through there?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, you remember a great big old white house. There were some hedges around it. Nobody lives in it now.
I don't, but others probably do. I've only lived here a short time.
Yes. Well, anyway, that old house is still standing. So when they put that railroad there, now I remember when they built it, it was a double track, they called it. They would work on Sunday. We would pick strawberries and sell to the, what they call bean box people, because they had a little portable houses that the people that worked in on this railroad. We would go to Sunday school on Sunday and come back and pick strawberries Sunday evening and sell to what we call, they would buy anything, chicken and eggs and buttermilk, strawberries, blackberries, anything that they had to sell, that they had to buy, that we would sell it. At that time, my grandmother, Jenny, was dead. And so we children, they had children just about our age. And my Uncle B.F. Scott, which was my mother's brother, he was a porter on the railroad. It's a wonder we hadn't got killed, because we would stand up on the railroad track and hear the train, the rail popping, and the first one jump off was a rotten egg, and the last one jump off was a blood red rose. We knew Uncle B.F.'s train was coming through. So then we would jump off the train, he would throw out candy to us, and we'd jump out there and get it. What if we hadn't got children? We can't say anything about children doing daring things like that now.
Because you did them yourself.
We did some of the same things, too.
But you evidently had some wonderful times in
We had good times. It's a beautiful big old house.
And it's right near the Big Lot.
That's right.
Is it across the street?
Well, you get the Big Lot when you turn right that Miracle Circle.
Okay.
Go around that curve and you see Big Lot to your right. And all of them brick houses at that time, there wasn't any house there, only this great big house, because Grandpa had a farm over there too, with raised chickens and all kinds of things. And believe it or not, the old barn is still there. Right. That we used to jump out of.
So the barn and the house still there?
The barn and the house is still there. And it had an old well out there. One of my grandsons went to take the picture of it not too long ago. And I told him, I said, now don't step on these planks here because there's old well, the old deep well. There's nobody in the house now.
Right.
That's right.
Who built the house?
My Uncle Walter Scott and McKinley. They had Beer. McKinley and Walter, they built, Beer was a carpenter, so he built this house with their own hand. They have great big old, wide halls, and if you want to go in, it's very interesting. But no closets in the bedrooms or anything like that. So Grandpa Scott sold this house and place to the Plank Scales, and they call it now Plank Scale Subdivision. They have a lot of nice brick homes around that now, mm-hmm. but there's nobody in the original house.
Right.
It's just like
the one that he lived in, and all that land
that's
around
right.
that
belonged all of that too? Land belonged to it. And when he moved over in Seneca, down in the section what he calls Scotland, he
yeah.
owned all of that land down in there. That's why they named it Scotland. It's a subdivision down in there now.
I see.
Yes.
You were telling me something about a mail, about not having mailboxes. How was the mail delivered then?
Well, the mailman had to come around in a buggy driving a horse. And most of the children, the black children, had to stand out on the side of the road. When you see the mailman come, they didn't have a mailbox. They could, you know, make a box or make something instead of that. So they would stand out on the side of the road seeing the mailman coming in. If he had anything, any mail for them or whatnot, to give it to them in the hand. So my grandfather bought an old tin mailbox. It was a box showing up. And it had a lid on it, turned down. It was kind of a square-looking thing with a lid on it. And so now that old mailbox, that was the first mailbox that we had. We could set out on the side of the road, and the mailman could open it up and drop the mail in it. Then we could go back and get the mail. Well, that old mailbox is still in the family now. One of my brother George's son have the old mailbox that he's keeping for a souvenir. Now, they don't make mailboxes like that now. They have, you know, these oval tops and whatnot. You'd open them up from the front now. But this one, you open it back from the top, and he has that old mailbox now.
Where does he live now?
He lives in Seneca.
He lives in Seneca,
that's
and he
right.
has the mailbox.
That's right.
What is
over
his name?
On Beach Drive.
And what is George's son's name?
His name is Thomas. Named for my
Thomas
father.
Gideon.
Thomas Gideon.
The third. And
that's
he actually owns
his
old mailbox, which is real old.
Now. That's right.
Oh, that's good to know. Did anyone else work for the railroad besides George?
Well, my mother's brother, B.F., he was about, he had a brother named George Benjamin Franklin. He was a mail clerk on the railroad. Salting the mail and whatnot. You know, at that time, they would put mail in pouches and hang them out. Like if the train didn't stop in Westminster, they had some kind of hook that they would, the train would come through real fast and they'd grab this mail bag. So Grandpa B.F. was a mail clerk on the railroad. And when we knew that Uncle B.F.'s train was coming through, we would stand out on the railroad waiting for Uncle B.F.'s train to come through. And we could hear the rail clucking, you know, before we could even see the train. We would stand on that railroad until we could see the train coming. And the first one jump off was a rotten egg in his collar. And the next one jump off was an apple blossom. And the last one jump off was a blueberry rose when we had cut key business on the train. So Grandpa, the S train would come through, he knew we would be standing out there looking for him. So he would throw out candy out the window and stand there and wave at us, and the train was flying, and we'd run out there. Sometimes the wind from the train, the speed of the train, you know, blowing our dress, and we'd jumping around out there picking up the candy. When I think about it now, it makes me shiver.
Right. This Uncle B.F., is he the one that helped build the house?
That's right. He was a carpenter. He went to school to learn the carpenter trade. He built a lot of houses around.
What other houses did he build in your family?
Well, he built my sister's house in Monticello, Georgia. Yes. And he built Dr. Thomas's house, you know, there on the corner. On Oak Street, he built that house.
That corner on Oak Street.
Right.
What other jobs were open to black men? You mentioned the railroad jobs, and of course your father was a minister and a farmer.
That's right.
And the carpenter job. Were there other jobs?
That's right. Well, they were just about anything that people was capable of doing. You see, they didn't have any skill, training, or anything like that. The most work that they did was, you know, just working for other people, you know, common labor, you might say. But the most thing we did was raising, the most thing that people did at that time was raising cotton, picking cotton and shucking corn. And down where we lived at Oakway, they called it Dubbing Ridge because the ground was so poor and they didn't have right fertilizer and different stuff like that, so the layers of corn wasn't long, so they
called it what kind of ridge?
Called it Dubbing Ridge.
Dubbing Ridge.
Dubbing Ridge.
That's a good name for it. What about jobs open to black women? What kind of
wasn't any jobs
no job.
Open to open to black women, only in these white people's kitchens. They cooked for them and cleaned the houses and tend to the babies and did that while the white women worked in the stores and places like that.
Right.
And they all had maids that time.
All the white women.
Most of the white women that was able to have them had maids. Uh-huh. But the poor white women was just out there with us picking cotton and doing the same thing that we were doing. But we got along fine together.
Mm-hmm.
That's right, because we was all poor, and one couldn't say anything about the other one. And sometimes they'd call you nigger and everything, and our people would say, "Now them little poor white children lick the lashes off your finger and they'd call you a nigger." We enjoyed it. We had fun. There wasn't a lot of things going that I don't wish it to return.
Right.
No, indeed not. I've come through a lot of changes, but I was always good and glad to adjust myself to what if changes come.
Do you remember if any of the young black people, when you were young, earned money? You know, what we call teenagers today, did they have a chance to earn it?
Well, they didn't have a chance to earn it, and if they did earn any, their parents put them out to work for these white people, and if they earned any money, they had to bring it back and give it to their parents. And their parents would maybe give them a little allowance out of it.
So they mostly earned money by doing the same kind of job their parents did.
That's right.
And of course, they gave it into the family.
That's right.
It's not their money.
No.
Family money.
That's right.
Where did your family shop, or where did families back before the 1920s shop?
Well, they had what they called down there. They had the community store where they had everything. They sell clothes, shoes, horse collars, little curtains with the curtains for the horse, and food and everything out of this one store they called a community general store.
Do you remember where that was located?
Well, they had one at Oakwood. The main one was that we traded was in Westminster.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. they had hardware, they had everything in one store. And you had to go in there in the fall of the year and buy the children winter clothes and shoes and everything. And you had what food you bought, because you didn't buy any food. Only they raised most of the food on the farm. They had their own chickens and eggs and milk and butter and meat and whatnot. Only thing they had to buy was such as sugar, coffee, and we had grains, still raised their own flour, and they still raised their own meal and all like that. And if you bought anything from the store, it was just something you might sell or that you could get along without if you had to. So it's like sugar and coffee and different things.
When you went to buy things in the store, did you use cash or credit or barter or what?
Well, at that time, there wasn't too much money circulating in our immediate group. So we had raised a lot of chickens, and you could sell the eggs and swap the eggs for sugar and different things like that. All of the surplus things that we didn't need on the farm, we could carry it to the store and buy different things.
So you really shop by barter.
That's right. That's right.
You exchange your goods
that's
for
right.
their goods.
That's
oh, fine. Okay. Were these stores, they were all owned by whites?
All owned by whites.
Were there any black-owned stores?
No,
all.
Like, now, my grandfather owned, in Senate, he ran a cafeteria. At that time, they called it a restaurant or something. Now, my mother has been working that sometimes, where they would cook food and sell it to people that was working different places.
Right. Yeah. Were the store
that was about the only black businesses or anything like that.
Was this restaurant, and who did you say owned that?
My grandfather, Scott.
Your grandfather, Scott.
Yes,
that.
That's right.
About when did he own that, do you remember?
Well, that must have been along in the teens, because at that time, that's when we were growing up.
That 1910 or
that's
something,
right.
When you were growing
yeah,
up.
That's right.
How long did he own that?
Oh, he owned it until he got, when did Grandpa Scott stop? And I tell you what was located, it was right down in what you call Ramcat Alley in Seneca. It's where the old building was. Now, we was living down there, but my mama would go up and help him cook in this restaurant and sell food. I don't know where they got the money to buy whatever kind of food they, what they was working on. You know, these other men that was working different things, they would work on the road. At that time, they had to ditch, you know, where they have these bulldozers and things, digging ditches and things. Men had to do that with shovels and whatnot. Mm-hmm. So they, ones that work in public works, would mostly eat at these cafeterias.
And that's how that restaurant
that's
made money,
right.
really, was
that's
from
right.
these.
That's
were they all black, pretty much?
Well, most of them were black, but if they was
there
poor white laborers,
too. They came
but
in
they would came there. They would come there and eat.
What was the name of this restaurant?
Well, they just called it Scott's Restaurant.
Scott's Restaurant. And where did you say it was located?
It was located in Ramcat Alley. I think there's furniture stores around that, not in Seneca. That's
I've
right.
heard that expression before.
That's
Ramcat
right.
Alley?
Because they called it Ramcat because the stores were too close together. I think it's a one-way street now.
Okay.
But at that time, you know, they had horses and buggies and things like that, mostly walking, so they could get down through there.
Right. Now, when you all shop for, excuse me, I want to ask you about clothing. Did you buy your clothing or make your own?
We made our own. We had to buy the cloth, and my mama could cut out dresses, and we all had, she had to sew it and make all the dresses.
But she
was the only thing that they could buy already made was probably men overalls.
You bought the overalls?
Yeah, bought them already made.
And of course shoes. Probably.
That's right, shoes. Right. That's right. But now, all the underclothes, little old panties and outing underskirts and things like that, she would make by the cloth in great big bolts. And then cut it out and make it.
And what else besides the cloth that she bought in the stores that you used, what else did she use?
if they was able to buy feed for the cattle, they would buy that in white sacks, white bags, they call it. Then after they use all of the grain or whatnot out of the sack, they turn it wrong side out and wash that. And you could pull out a string and ravel it, and they'd save this thread and take these bags, take this white sacks and make underclothes and make little panties and slips and things like that. She was good to sew. She could sew and make things for other people.
Good.
Yeah.
Did she sew for other people?
She would sew for other people.
Did she charge them?
No, didn't charge a thing. Just cut out little dresses and little different things. And she would always, I would cry. She wouldn't know what I was crying for. Because I was older than Lurley. And she would make Lurley's dresses and pleat hers, you know, put little pleats in the skirt. And she would gather mine. And I wanted mine pleated. And I would stand up and cry. And she said, what you crying for? And I never would tell her what I was crying for, but I wanted mine pleated too.
But you wanted her to do it without your talent.
Yeah. I don't know how I thought she was going to get the best of it unless I told her. But I have cried and cried and cried. And I would cry to Father.
You talked about your mother making clothing for these other people. Was it just friends or who else?
Well, she would sew for her family. And she would sew for her friends or people that couldn't sew. And some, if they would get a rip in something, didn't know how to sew that up on the right side, you know, turn it and fix it like that. And a lot of white people would bring cloth back for her to make clothes for them.
And she didn't charge them
she
either? Even the white people?
They would sometimes give her the scraps, and she would take these scraps and make quilts. So take out all of these little pieces and make quilt tops, sew up and make quilt tops. And then they'd take cotton and take these white sacks, sew enough of them together to make a lining for the quilt. And then they'd pad it, you know, put some fluffy cotton in that, spread the top on it, and they'd all have quilts, you know, and everybody come around and sit around. And if my mama thought they wasn't making the stitches neat enough, she said, well, you can go in there and do the cooking and fix dinner for us while we do this. And they would make all these pretty quilts.
Do you have any of the quilts
I think
that you
I have some of these.
Oh, that's marvelous if you still have some.
I think I have some. Need quilts now. We use blankets and whatnot.
So these quilts would be pretty old.
That's right. They are old. And most of them we didn't know any better than to throw these things away that we didn't want and didn't need. And why?
We all did that.
Well, we did.
Did the family, you said that you raised almost all your food. So did you raise just everything just about that you ate except for a few things that
That's
you
right.
mentioned like well, sugar
they,
and coffee?
They raised hogs, barley and meat and sausage and seasoning. Then they would take this hog, the fat from these hogs and stew it down, you know, and make the lard. That's why we all have cholesterol now. And
did she make, your sister said she made butter, is that right?
Yeah, she would take sweet milk, you know, and let it stay till the cream rise on the milk. And you would have, I guess you probably have seen in some of these antique places where they have these dashes.
Yeah, I have a butter churn.
You have a butter churn. Well, you know how to make butter then. And then she had a little round thing she called a butter bowl. They would beat out all of this meat, milk out of it, and put it down in this bowl, and they'd make a little flour on top of it, you know, and you set it. They said a pound butter bowl, but they didn't weigh out the thing, but they would sell it about a pound. This is a pound of butter because it fit in this butter mold. And they would have little half pound molds, and you know, she'd fix it pretty, and she'd sell this butter to people. And anybody would buy her butter.
And you said white folks would buy
white
hers
people
too.
Would buy hers
and own a black woman.
What kind of furniture did the families own, or did your family own?
Well, my family, as near as I know, we had bedsteads. We didn't have too much furniture, just what we had. One thing I do know, we had cane bottom chairs. We had chairs that you would have cane bottoms in. And if you use this chair long enough, this cane bottom was going to have to be replaced. And they was old men that made splits and everything to replace these cane bottom chairs. And we had wood cook stoves, you know, that you had to burn wood and have to get up in the morning and make a fire in the stove. And then had old things they call a safe, a place where you put your dishes in. It had a tin front, you know, with little holes in it.
The pie safe.
Yeah, pie safe. Pie cupboards. And they made both of their dish towels and things from these white sacks, you know.
Right.
Yeah.
Did you buy most of your furniture, or did you make, was some of it made?
Well,
by
I don't know where they got it, because the furniture that I remember was never replaced. We just had a bed. It was a bald bed.
It was there when you were born.
Yes, that's right. But now, so far as the table's concerned, I'm sure they were made. Somebody made them.
You think somebody in the family made the table?
I don't know whether it's in the family or not, but I'm sure because they had these wide plank tops,
okay.
and around the edges, you know, it's kind of beveled off to keep it from being sharp. And I know somebody made it, but I don't remember even asking who did it or what.
In other words, it looked handmade.
Yeah, oh, they was handmade, sure.
So you don't think they were purchased
no,
from a furniture store or something like that?
Because
they weren't furniture stores back then anyway, were they?
No, wasn't too many. If there was any furniture store, they was making everything. Cause
except for the bedstead, which you know
that's
they
right.
Bought.
Yes, because I know we had these high-top beds, you know, with these, I think they only got one of them things now, real high, they go up and yell into your ceiling. And they had big old roll bottoms on the
beautiful,
top.
Yeah. Did anyone in your family make furniture that you knew of?
No, not that I know of. They didn't do anything like that. Now, Uncle B.F. and Uncle Walter on the McKenna, they built houses and things, but I don't remember them making any furniture.
You mentioned earlier that your mother made quilts and that you still possess those in the family. Are there any other things, like furniture or oak baskets or tools, that are still in possession of your family?
Well, I have an old basket in my little utility room now, but nobody in my family didn't make it, but it is a homemade basket.
And it's very old. You've
it's
had that
very
long
old, yes.
Were any of the older members of your family known for special talents, such as musicians, singers?
Well, my father was very musical. He sang, could sing. My sister was a music teacher, learned after she married and went to Washington. She played for churches and music. In fact, my family was kind of a musical inclined family in a way. My father appreciated music, and he loved singing, and he could compose songs and different things like that.
Did any of you play instruments?
Well, she had music lessons.
Lurley
did. So she was a music teacher. She would teach
piano.
Other people music piano. That's right. But now we just play because we like music. We're all musical inclined. We like music.
And you said your father was a talented...
He was very talented, that's right. He organized what they call a singing convention in Oconee County. And they named it Gideon Singing Convention. He would teach people these music notes, you know, teach them how to go up and down, different things like that. And we wanted to know it. He taught it to us, but we never could apply it too much. But anyway, he was the musician in the band.
You mentioned the singing convention. Did Did you ever attend any of these things?
Oh, yes, he had us in there. We couldn't sing. He had too much voice singing, but he, oh, yes, he would brag on us and tell us, oh, yeah, you can do it. That's right. Oh, yeah, you can. We couldn't have to do it. He told us, that made us think we were doing better than what we were doing. But anyway, everybody enjoyed this, sang this Oconee County Singing Convention. And when he died, it went on for a few years after he passed. But now they don't do it.
Right. And it was called the Gideon Singing Convention.
Well, it was called, that's right, the Thomas Gideon Singing Convention.
And how often did
they would meet? They would have conventions at least 3 times a year. They would have what they called a spring session. And then they would have all everybody coming together. And he was the president of it. And they had a little thing they call a tuning fork. When he hit that thing and he'd say, yeah, and he'd hold it to his ears and whatnot like that. Now, we never did learn all of that. But anyway, he had groups. Every church had a singing group in that church. And they would come to this convention. And all day long, one group would sing. And he would rate them on how they held to the music and to whatnot. And then another group would sing maybe a different song or practically the same song. And then he would rate them on their perfection or however they did it and whatnot. And at the end of the session, what group won the prize for being the best singers in the group? And he could have some kind of scale that he would go by that would determine which one did it more perfect or whatnot.
Did they win a prize or
well,
something?
Well, they didn't give them any kind of prize or anything like that.
But just the honor.
Just the honor.
The name
right.
For being
yeah,
the best
that's
group
right.
That year.
And they all, each one was just anxious to do it.